This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Code word's done. If you missed it, you missed it. If you heard it, hit the website, tsn1200.ca. You plug that code word in. Good luck. Somebody's winning a Zoob jersey. Listen tomorrow morning on TSN 1200 with on TSN Mornings with JR. And I think Michaela's in for a bit tomorrow, I believe, with JR with Simmer off this week. We've got Sens Canes tickets this hour to get to. Four-pack for the final home game of the season still to come. And listen for Kenny. Another pair of tickets to go to Game 2, Round 1. 67s and the Generals, Slush Puppy Center in Gatineau on Sunday. Game 1 is tonight. We had the all-day ticket giveaway Tuesday for tonight's game. Kenny's fired up. He'll have the call on our brother station, 580 CFRA. So we're busy here at Bell Media Radio because Dean Brown is going to call a game right here at Canadian Tire Center with Gord Wilson at 7, pre-games at 5. Flyers are in town. Dean joins us right now as our Sens and NHL insider from his home office. Hello, Dean. How are you?
I'm doing well, boys. Yeah, very busy day today. Lots going on.
Major League Baseball season's underway. Jays play it just after 4. It's a great time of year.
Now, would this be your number one, number two, or number three suit? If you rated your suits, you're like your best suit. You got a great suit on today.
It's my worst suit.
The worst suit?
It's my worst suit. This is an old suit.
That's a good-looking suit for your worst suit.
I bought this suit. I know exactly where I bought it. You remember way back in the day, I moved to Toronto.
Yep.
When they launched the old Team Radio Network.
Yep.
Took a run at the nationwide thing. Mm-hmm. And I was only there 4 months because that's when our old friend Duffer had the Sens job. The Sens job, for people that don't know, used to be a job where you covered the Sens full time. You did pre-intermissions, post, and you covered the team.
Yep.
Duffer went to work for your old buddy, John Shannon, for an upstart television channel called Leafs TV. Mm. So he moved to Toronto, and then I moved back. And it worked out quite well, Dean. Anyways, when I was there briefly for those 4 months, I went to a place, a guy that I work with in Toronto, Aquarius Menswear, and set me up. And I went and bought this suit. That's in 2001, so this is not a brand new suit.
Well, you're getting great usage out of it.
So not my A suit, no.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, that's a very good-looking suit for your worst suit.
Okay, thank you.
He saved number one for the commish, of course.
Yeah. Well, understandably,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the top dog, and, you know, he put on the top clothes, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a sleeveless shirt for Saturday's game against the Leafs.
Go in muscle shirt and ball cap for the Leafs. You're going straight down.
I'm going full meth. No sleeves, right? I'm just going to show up. It's all good. All right, we got lots of stuff to hit on here. Let's start. We just touched on Tyler Cleven. It's fun, right? It's always fun to watch somebody make their NHL debut. And this and everything's a little bit different. This is going to be fun because he's a different kind of prospect he's unique. They don't have a guy like Tyler Cleven. He's a bit of a unicorn of what he could be if he fully develops what they hope to be an NHL defenseman. So what are you looking for tonight in Tyler Cleven?
I hope he just enjoys the experience and is out there and just is in a controlled environment and, just doesn't get himself all twisted around, you know. Like, this is, you know, for a player like Tyler Cleven, this has potential to be a really awkward first game because, you know, in college hockey, he's prided himself and, you know, one of his big roles, and you guys have talked about, he's a big guy and he's a very physical player. I imagine in the NHL, and I guess I will have some kind of say in that since I'll be the one, if you start repeating something, generally becomes a thing, but he may well become the K-train, you know, if the big hits start coming like the old A-train did, you know, maybe we just switch the letter to the K-train. That's been suggested already online but he's got to start doing it first. He's got to be that kind of a player. And if you're going to be that kind of player in college, that's one thing. You're going to be that kind of a player against Philadelphia in your first game. That's a completely different thing. You know, this team has, you know, 33 fighting majors. You take a run at somebody, you're going to have to answer for somebody for that. And, you know, you're not in college anymore wearing a full face shield. You got half your face open. And like Mike Tyson used to say, everybody's got a game plan until they get punched in the mouth. So, you know, I think basically he should probably, and I'm sure they're talking about, just concentrate on the puck and don't worry about, you know, line up those big hits and setting a tone or something. That'll come as you get your feet wet in professional hockey. But, you know, maybe not be worrying about that a ton tonight and just have a good, solid, steady game. And if we're not talking about you, that's a good thing. That's a good start. But I think that, you know, he's a guy that because he's a big guy, tempo is a thing you always look at. You know, when you make the transition from college hockey to the NHL, you know, you can have his old coach saying, you know, I think he's NHL ready. Well, that's great for your college coach to say that. And I'm sure he believes that and he believes in the kid and he should. But this is a different tempo. This is a different animal. And, you know, said the same thing about JBD, and he's never been able to make his way back to the NHL to become a regular player. Take some time. And I think that's the most important thing. You have to have the patience to let these young players develop at their own pace. Every player is not a robot that's like the last robot. They all develop at different paces. And some of them develop quickly and some of them don't develop at all, you know. But you have to wait and see what he is. So I would just preach patience. If you think he's going to be that big, bruising, left-shot, third-pair defenseman for this team for the next 15 years, maybe he's going to be that. But he's probably not going to be that on his first night in the NHL. So just have patience and let him work his way in.
Hmm. It's interesting when you mentioned about hit the physical part of the game and, you know, potentially the fighting. Mm-hmm. It's been intriguing to me that you'd say, well, how can a scrapper come out of college hockey? They don't even fight in college hockey. Well, I mean, they fight. They get kicked out. You get suspended. It doesn't happen nearly as often as it does in the National Hockey League. But then you think about, well, George Parros was a Princeton guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Mark Borowiecki played at
Clarkson.
Mm-hmm. And came in and was more than capable of handling himself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about Klevin in those terms, I don't have any doubt that he's probably going to be a guy that will be capable of handling himself if we don't see it like we used to when a rookie would come into the league, especially a big guy with a reputation for being physical. He'd get a tap on the shoulder to be like, okay, kid, let's see what you've got. Doesn't mm-hmm. happen nearly as often. But just because he came from college doesn't mean that, oh, he's got a steep learning curve here to be able to handle himself physically at the NHL level.
Mm-hmm. No, true. Yeah, no, I've never said that anybody comes out of college can't fight or doesn't know what they're doing. If you're a pugnacious person, whether you wore a cage for part of your career or not, you're still a pugnacious person.
Yeah.
I just don't know Tyler Klevin enough to know if he's that kind of person. Some guys, when you take the cage off, it frees them. Like the guys you talked about, it lets them out of the cage, you know, and, you know, that becomes a big part of their game. Other guys, it changes their game because they're, you know, they are not that way. And I don't know yet with Tyler Klevin which one he is. Maybe he's a guy that can't wait to get out of the cage and wants to drop and wants to get that part of his game going as well. But all I'm saying is that if you're going to play the kind of game that is advertised,
yep,
and that is what's coming down the road for you. You're going to have to defend yourself because
yep,
people in the NHL will come after you. So we'll find out whether he is or isn't good at it. You know, having played college doesn't mean you aren't. It just means we have to find out, and he'll
yep
find out soon enough. You know, if he's going to play that kind of game, which I think over the long term he will, because that is his game. But, you know, then that's one of the things that he's going to have to deal with, and we'll see how he deals with it.
8 games left. All signs point towards Cam Talbot starting tonight. Injuries aside, if health's not an issue, who plays more, Matt Sogard or Cam Talbot the rest of the way?
I think Cam Talbot, because I think Lloydy, you know, with what's left, it's not going to radically change the development curve of Matt Sogard. You know, he's going to get in some games. I think down the stretch, it's probably going to be the normal starter stuff. Starter plays 75% of the games. Backup plays 25%. I think that'll probably be the thing because, you know, when they do get to the point where mathematically people, you know, look at the fact they can't make the playoffs, right now the odds are infinitesimal. Like, they're so low. But you're still alive. Until you're dead, you're alive. But the coaches, players, they want to win. they want to win. They want that to be the mentality going forward from today and from last week and from whatever, you know, where they are right now. This team is out of the development stage by and large. It's the play and perform stage. And so you're trying to talk about always trying to win. It's about winning, period. And so I think that, you know, injuries aside, and if everybody's healthy, I think Talbot's probably going to play more games down the stretch than Sogard does. I think it's, I was listening to Dave yesterday when he was on in the afternoons with Lee, and they were, you know, and Creature, and they were talking about, he was talking about the mentality, and I agree with what he said. You know, this, the mentality is now about winning. So that's your mentality every day. And where you end up in the standings is where you end up. But so for that reason, I think that the coach is likely to choose to play his starter as often as you would normally play your starter, which is about 75% of the time.
Listening to Tim Stützle speak today, I was making the point to Lloydie after listening that don't even know if you can really quantify how much this kid has grown in the course of this year, both on and off the ice. Like listening to him speak today and talk about, you know, the self-awareness in talking about the importance of body language, and he's got to watch that stuff. Like he has grown into such an important player and an important personality for this team in such a short period of time. Are you surprised that he's been able to grow as quickly as he has?
In some ways, CJ, yes. And in other ways, no. In some ways, yes, because he is only 21. You know, like, you look at his chronological age and you go, he's really young to be where he is. Number one center, he's been forced into that role with the injuries to Norris, and facing all the best defensemen and all the best centers in the league every night and still generating points at a high level. So on one hand, no, I'm not in any way surprised by his numbers, but I am surprised, and surprised is the wrong word. I think that what I like about the other side is that, you know, he talks about the fact that he's got to be better and doesn't like his game. And I, you know, I've heard you guys say, well, yeah, like look at the points he's putting up. How can he be displeased? We all look at the points, and the points are impressive. You know, he has more points per game in his first 200 NHL games than Leon Draisaitl did. And Draisaitl is playing with McDavid. You know, Tim Stützle wasn't. So those numbers are impressive. But he's very well aware of the fact the other night, for example, in New Jersey, that he got four assists. Problem was, two were for his team and two were for the other team. And that's when he's talking about that. He's not talking about the fact that he's you know, not happy that he's not at 100 points yet. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about the fact that he knows, he's a smart enough kid to know that to be a really elite level player, it can't just be about offense. And he knows that. And so the parts in his game that he's disappointed with are the parts where he's been too casual with the puck in too many dangerous areas and too many really costly giveaways. And so that's what I like about where he's at right now, because he recognizes that, he knows it, and he's determined to make it better. You know, and he's got a high enough skill level that you almost have to say, if he's determined to make something better, there's almost no chance it won't be better. You know, like you look at his potential, on the ice, and what do you think he can't achieve if he really tries to? Now, it's not going to be easy because, and I've said this before, I think he's probably one of those guys who was allowed to be laissez-faire all through his hockey career because he was always a guy who produced big numbers, and so coaches didn't demand things of him defensively. Right. And if he made mistakes, it didn't mean he wasn't going to play anymore. He was too valuable to bench. But I think now that, you know, he understands, and he's been through enough video sessions with the coaches, and he knows the importance of it. And he also knows that the coaching staff is not asking anything of him that they don't ask and demand of everybody else. And so I think it is fantastic that a 21-year-old realizes all this. A 21-year-old star realizes this, because there's a lot of 21-year-olds who just go, coach can go blow it out his snoot. I mean, if I'm going to get goals, no one's going to say anything. I'm not going to lose any ice time. I can do what I want. He's not like that. He's very conscientious. He wants to be better. He will be better for sure. Like, I have no doubts about that. But it's just not very often that you have 21-year-olds at his skill level that are that self-aware, that accept that and accept and know that the coach is right, that you're mature enough at 21 to know that he is right. And that's a part of your game that is not where it needs to be for you to be a superstar. You're already a star. But how do you get to be a superstar? Well, it's those other parts of the game. And again, look at his countrymen. Look at Leon Draisaitl. Leon Draisaitl is as good a defensive forward as you're going to find out there amongst players who are also high-skill players. So, you know, like, he understands that. And I think that the amazing part is that he gets all that, and he's only 21.
So they've lost Shabbat. They've lost Chychrun. And we had this discussion earlier about, you know, stepping up collectively, and that's usually always, you know, the answer, because it's the correct one. It's usually you can't be one guy. But if I wanted to talk about one guy, and we mentioned it last hour, Dean, and I'll ask the question to you this way. What is it about Eric Brännström's game that lately it seems to have taken a step of its own? Where has this confidence come from? And he's showing more of an offensive flair. His defensive game has improved. Because really, that is a key guy. If they're going to keep this train moving forward and keep hope alive, he needs to maintain this version of Eric Brännström with Shabbat and Chychrun both out.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where the confidence pop has come from, but it's fantastic that it has arrived. And I think mostly people notice the offensive side of it, you know. But if you still look and wonder why, of all the defensemen, he is the lowest ice time player, it's because his defensive game has gotten better, but there's still no defenseman on this team that loses containment in his own zone more. And that's a size issue. It's just, you know, you can't change it how tall a 6'5" guy is, and you can't change how tall a 5'9" guy is. So, you know, the guys who are his size around the league have found ways to be, you know, competent defensively. And while for him it's gotten better, for sure, way better, it's still not at a level where you say this is a top four guy as far as containment in his own zone. And so if people wonder why, you know, they look at the analytics and they go, well, he's got some great analytical numbers, and you know, and he's jumping up there in the play now, and he's generating points. He's got, you know, 4 points in the last seven games. And while that's not a world beater, that is by far the best he's ever had at the NHL level as far as a streak goes. But his numbers still remain low as far as average ice time, which is really the only true form of truly understanding how the coaching staff feels about his play. Ice time is the definitive word on where you are on the team, and he is still last amongst defensemen. And one of the issues still is, like I said, while it's gotten better, there is no defenseman that loses containment more than Eric. And so that's still a part of his game as a young player, which he is. He is still a young player. That is the part of his game that he still has to work on, because at 23, you know, he's 185 pounds and he's 5'9", 5'10". Those numbers aren't likely to change. So he has to find a way to be able to be competent at containing and boxing out in his own zone. And that is going to be the thing that, you know, resonates through his career. And that is going to be the thing that gets him more ice time on this team or any other team that he ends up playing for in his career. And so I think that while you look at a lot of his analytics and you look at some of the points and the nice, you know, video that's come out of the end-to-end rush, fantastic. All those things are good things. But the one thing that's the most important thing for him to get better at, he still has to get better at. And again, as a young player, he's only 23. I don't think that, you know, you should say this is what he is and that's it. He's still got room to grow, but that's the area where it's most important that he grows. More offense, sure, that would be nice. That's a bonus. But as a defenseman, for almost any coach in this league, unless you are one of those elite special offensive guys, your ice time still is going to revolve around how good you are in your own zone. And he is still, you know, in this roster, amongst this group of defensemen in Ottawa, has the lowest amount of ice time on average per game.
So do you bring him back for next year?
I think so. You know, you look, like I say, you know, you look at his age, you look at, you know, how much potential there is to get better, and you look at the advances that he's made this year. And, you know, just as a, you know, just as a thought of where you are right now, you bring a player like him back until you have somebody that's better than him. You know, every player wins a job or loses a job because some other player wins a job or loses the job. And until someone takes his full-time job away, he's still a guy that you play in your top six. So until you get a better option, and that goes for any player, until you get a better option, why wouldn't you? And the other thing, too, is, you know, if you bring him back and you re-sign him, even if internally in the organization they don't see him long-term as being a top six on this team, I think that he's done some great work in the second half of the season especially to put himself in a situation where you might be able to use the asset to make another deal, even if he doesn't work into your top six next year. If you have somebody that comes up next year and, you know, whether it's, you know, take your pick. Is it Larson? Is it JBD? Is Lassie Thompson make a dramatic turnaround and become, you know, a guy that steals a job next year? If somebody comes up, then you have to make a choice. But as of right now, today, CJ, you know, they're playing him because he's their best option. So that means he's a top six defenseman on this team. So, yeah, I would bring him back. And I don't know if that means he's going to be a Senator in 5 years, but he's an asset that has value. And right now you're playing him, so that should mean that he's better than, you know, the guys that you have in your system that you think he's better than. So, yeah, I would if I was the general manager. I would definitely bring him back. And when you do get to the point where you have somebody that you think is better than that option, if he's playing well enough and has advanced far enough to have worth in the business, that's good for you too. And that's good for him, a fresh start somewhere else, if down the road that's what ends up happening.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. We got one tonight. We got the Philadelphia Flyers in town, 7 o'clock faceoff. Dean and Gord will have the call. We got a pregame show coming your way at 5. Dean, finish that prep work in the home office, and we'll see you at the rink soon. Thanks for joining us.
All right, we'll see you boys tonight.
There's Dean Brown joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. All right, half hour to go. We got a few items to get to. Stick around. Back in a moment on In the Box on TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
All right, 134. I want to give away those Hurricanes tickets. So let's do that right here. Text contest. We got a four-pack coming your way for the game April 10th. That's the last regular season game of the season for the Ottawa Senators in this building. They have one more game after that. They're going to be in Buffalo. Last home game. That's this. All right. Four-pack. Get your tickets at Ticketmaster.ca. Hurricanes will be in town on the 10th. 12-1200 standard text message rates apply. Give me the name of the former Hartford Whaler goaltender that in the very early days of the Ottawa Senators played in an NHL All-Star game.
Does spelling count?
No, it doesn't. See, I don't make it too difficult. I don't. Because there was actually two players that played in that game in year one. Because they had another category. Remember they had the veterans category?
Mm-hmm.
And another player ended up playing. The Senators had two All-Stars in year one. Because they had the special designation category as well. But this player was named an All-Star and played in the All-Star game. Name that player. 12-1200.
And did not your veteran guy wind up being like...
He was a star,
wasn't
he?
One of the stars or player of the game or whatever. I remember him skating out to...
Did his customary lap around center.
Yeah.
Where the fan club was based in Renfrew for that guy.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, is the head of the alumni of the visiting team tonight. These
Correct.
Days.
All comes
hey,
back.
Hey, look at me Completes just tying it all together. Yep. We're talking about Brad Marsh, but I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about the other All-Star.
Right.
For the Sens.
Somewhere in my treasure trove of memories of my years covering the National Hockey League, there's a picture of...
By the way, sorry, we'll give you to 138.
There you go.
Okay.
Somewhere in a shoebox or something. There's a picture of myself. I can't really remember who else might be in the photo. But also, said player, the correct answer to your question, all of us sitting on a Zamboni at that All-Star game in Montreal.
Oh, okay.
And said player is at the steering wheel. So there you go.
Now, said player, who will say his name shortly because we're going to run out of time anyway. And,
yep.
Is he still working in hockey? He was a coach of a notable junior team.
Yep.
In the O for a number of years. He hasn't been there. I just pulled up his page here. I don't know where he is now, but has been a longtime coach in hockey as well.
Yeah.
So there you go. Like, not just a goalie coach, a coach at coaching teams.
Some people have the mentality to play for an expansion team, and some don't. And I would say that this applied to a couple of the early players. The player who is the answer to your question had the right mentality to deal with the, let's say, challenges of playing for one of the worst teams in the history of hockey. And the other player that I'll mention, who has since become a Stanley Cup winner, Craig Billington, did not have the mentality.
He was a year two number one goalie.
To play for one of the worst teams in hockey. And year two team might have been as bad or worse than year one team. At least to be around. Because first year team, hey, you're back in the NHL, kind of exciting. Bunch of guys who didn't get a chance to play regularly in the National Hockey League are getting that chance. They're excited about that. And you're in the NHL, getting an NHL salary. Year two, the shine's kind of gone off. Now, the losing's not fun, and they were not good in year two. And Craig Billington did not suffer losing well. And there were many a night where he was not a very happy human being.
Now, here's another tie-in. It just kind of worked out this way. Like, I've given away these tickets for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
So I try to tie in an Ottawa, Carolina / Hartford angle to give away the tickets. And I obviously don't make the question that difficult. I want everybody to have a chance to win these tickets and come to a game. So it's a 4-pack on the line. All right. Enough time has passed. We're talking about Peter Sidorkovitz, the year one number one goaltender who was selected off of Hartford's roster to be the goaltender for the Sens in year one in the 92-93 season. So we talked about these tie-ins like Marshy. Well, the other tie-in, Brad Shaw was on that team.
Yeah.
Brad is associate coach with the Philadelphia Flyers alongside John Tortorella, who he's worked with quite a bit over the last number of years. So Brad Shaw's in town, and he's a year one Ottawa Senator.
But don't ask him about opening night.
He was scratched.
No, he played.
No. Oh, Marshy was scratched. I got them confused. Marshy, because whenever you talk to Marshy about it, he's always good. People assume he played. He said, well, I was there, but they didn't play me.
I can remember him coming off the ice before that opener, going into the dressing room and hung around to speak to him because, you know, he was brought in. He was a name. Brad Marsh was a name in the National Hockey League back then. And I remember going into the dressing room. He sits down at his stall. So, Swampy, how do you feel about not playing? Looks up. I know how you Canadian hockey writers are. I don't have anything to say about that. Like, okay, we're off to a good start here, covering the Ottawa Senators on opening day. Yeah, don't ask Brad Shaw
opener. Can I interject real quick on that? I never covered Brad Marsh. I was there opening night, but I was 17.
Yes.
So I wasn't working.
Yeah.
But my interactions with Marshy over the years were always fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just a super guy. Super guy. Yeah. Was he a bit different to cover when he's an active player? Because some guys, you know, they get into a headspace, and they got to feel like they're got to be wired differently. And it's the old Looney Tunes cartoon, Mr. Wheeler or Mr. Walker.
Yeah, he didn't want it to be about him not playing.
I'm shutting this down.
Senators' first night back in the National Hockey League. He was like, well, I know you guys are going to make a big deal. Whatever I've got to say about not playing, clearly he's not happy. So he was just, nope, I'm not going there. And I have nothing to say, and I'm only going to say it once. Yeah. But Brad Shaw wound up getting concussed on that opening night. I remember him getting hammered into, for some reason I want to say it was Kirk Muller, but I'm not absolutely certain about that. But he got his bell rung, as we would have said back in those days.
Yeah. And you're fine. Your bell's just rung.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell him he's Wayne Gretzky.
Vanner. Oh, poor Vanner.
Yeah. And he did not have a recollection of opening night.
Oh, that's not good.
No.
That's not a good story at all.
No. So there's a lot that happened. You know, talking about.
I know you had a chance to talk to Brad. I didn't see him here. I know Brad a little bit.
I talked to him for a little bit this morning. I saw him in the hallway. We were both kind of looking at each other, being like, we're both still at it. for going back to like opening.
It's like the Paul Rudd thing doing the hot sauce. Who would have thought? Hey, not me.
Yeah. Yeah. We're both still here. Yep. And he was talking about his son, who's been playing over in Europe.
Brady.
And getting towards the end of his career now. And Brad saying to him, so what do you think you're going to do when you're finished playing? I'm going to do what you did. Just going to become a coach.
Yeah.
Brad's like, I was blessed, because he said, I kind of went right from not, you know, he's such a humble guy, as he said, not being a star player in the league. He said, I was a journeyman. But to have that opportunity to go right from playing to being an assistant in the NHL, like, he doesn't feel like he was in that position where so many people have to pay their dues, right? And riding the buses in the East Coast League or whatever. And actually, in our conversation this morning, Brad was like, kind of wish I did do that a little bit, because he said the discussions I have, and he mentioned Jack Capuano specifically, saying that Jack did come up through those ranks, and so much of the time at that level, you're involved in everything, right? Personnel decisions, building a roster, going out, trying to sign players. And Brad said, part of me is like, that might have been interesting to do and a good thing to have, to give you a different perspective when you're thinking about the way a team's built and everything else. So a lot of different ways to get where he got to. But he's another guy he's put in a lot of miles and coached a lot of games in the National Hockey League.
Absolutely.
Good for him.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we've got to go to break here. And Kenny, who's our winner?
Who Mike is the winner today.
Mike is the winner. Mike, congratulations. You knew, like many of you did, Peter Zadorkovich was the correct answer. Represented the Sens in the All-Star game in Montreal in year one alongside Brad Marsh. We'll have another four-pack to give away tomorrow. And I just as we go here, I was talking about Brad Shaw last night. I was asked and honored to be an MC at a charity gala last night at Algonquin College. So it was six graduating students for Algonquin's Bachelor of Hospitality and Tourism Management program. They put on the Guts and Roses charity gala. And that's all to benefit CHEO's Crohn's and Colitis Research Lab. It's a lovely dinner, silent auction, raffle. Really nice. And anyway, Sherry Payne came back into town. Sherry moved to St. Louis with her husband last. So Sherry's no longer living in the community. And Sherry, of course, is Mike Pang's sister. Mike works with us downtown. And, of course, Darren Pang's sister.
Yeah.
And Sherry has done more for Crohn's and Colitis Foundation in Eastern Ontario than anybody the last 25, 30 years. So she's back in town. And she came to this event visiting friends and family. And like one of her best friends is Mary Shaw. Very good friends with Mary and Brad Shaw.
Yeah, great stuff.
So we're talking Brad's name came up last night. Anyways, there's my shout-out, though. $4,000 raised from the students at Algonquin last night at this gala. Outstanding.
And just to go, to take that just quickly a step farther, when Brad saw Brian Murray's story,
yes,
about being diagnosed with colon cancer, Brad, when he was in St. Louis, Hitch, all the coaches went for colonoscopies, and they did find
polyps
yep. in Brad Shaw, and he had them removed. So, yep. again,
Brad
bringing all the...
He credits Brian Murray.
Yeah.
Saving his life, maybe,
yeah.
right?
Yep. I did a chapter on that in the in the book. So, again, the bringing all the... completing the circle.
No, and Brad was always generous with his time. He played, and I often got partnered up with him playing in the old golf tournament at Riedelview.
Yeah, at Riedelview.
The benefit as well. So, anyways, there we go. Started with Sidorkovich, early sands, Brad Shaw, and here we go. One more segment ahead, and then we'll turn it over to Creature, to Lever, to Maddie. It's a drive coming up on TSN 1200.